real name is Arthur. LeSure. Nurse, and then LeSure came, the sugar came from LeSure. Now, have you, you grew up here?
Oh, yes.
Born?
Yeah.
Okay.
The house right upstairs.
And your family has been in Westboro since?
1722.
1722. One of the few families that are still here, I think.
Well, yes, one of the few. I think the Bowmans have been in town maybe about that same time, too.
And this house, was that built then?
No, this house was built about 1810, the main part of the house. And they had an old house, and I think some of the outlets built out of the timber out of the old house.
But it's always been on this land, and this has always been your family land.
That's right.
And you were related to Rebecca Nurse, is that right? Who was accused of being a witch and hung in Danvers. Hanged in Danvers, was it?
It was out of Salem. At that time, I guess it was called Salem Village, but it's now Danvers.
And right now, Sugar, how much land do you have? What is the extent of?
It's about 100 That's about 180 acres.
And it's all right around this area. It's all in one
contiguous.
And it's been farmed since the 1700s?
1722. That's when the two brothers came out from Framingham and bought the place, because at that time it was Shrewsbury.
And later on it was?
It became Westboro.
And who were the two brothers, their names?
It's Ebenezer.
Mm-hmm.
And William.
Now, right now, I'm going to start on 1983 and go backwards maybe.
Okay.
What are you involved in, or could you describe what your agriculture and what you're farming in now?
Well, because I've retired from farming, but my son, Jonathan, is into the small fruits, strawberries and raspberries, and eventually into blueberries.
And when did that small fruit growing begin?
Well, he's been at it for 10 years.
Well, didn't he start about 1975?
Well, it's become, I sold my cows and 76, and he started in a few years earlier than that, selling and to put his strawberries in, working the fields.
So he probably started about
1970. Okay, and since then that has grown to a pretty large business, I would guess.
It's a pick-your-own operation.
Yes.
With some sold at stand down in front of the house here.
Now, could you tell me a little bit about the Agriculture Preservation Act, or how your land was involved in that, and when that happened?
Well, that came about people in the Commonwealth that felt that a lot of the agricultural land is being absorbed by developers, either residential developers or used for manufacturing or industry. So that and it seemed that many times the developers selected the flat, good, early, easy to develop lands, and so a lot of the good land had disappeared. So they started out in, I don't know, it was 78 or 79, to appropriate a sum of money to buy up the development rights on the farms for those that have applied for the development rights.
Do you you know who that idea originated with? Did that originate with, you know, the Commissioner of Agriculture?
I think they were very much involved with that.
Of course, the Commissioner of Agriculture has always been involved in it, but I couldn't.
It's a lot to do with the concern about having enough food in the state, as you were saying before. How did Nurse Farm get involved then? They got involved in 79, was it?
You applied.
To the development rights, and then before we were accepted, we had people come out and look at the farm and see if they felt it would fall into that category. And then they thought it did, so then they sent appraisers out to appraise the farm according to its highest and best value, and also for the agricultural value.
Mm-hmm.
And when they arrived at those two figures that were satisfactory to everybody, then you subtract the agricultural value from the development value, and that was the sum that the state agreed to pay for the development rights.
And then we had that come up at town meeting.
So part of this development rights is that if the town would like to share in the development rights, then they would have some say as to the use of the land. They felt that the town should be involved as much as the state, and being a local town, that if there was any violation, the town could see it faster than they could at the state.
Now, this would keep, was part of this to keep this agricultural land, though? They bought the development rights so that this would stay agricultural land?
Right.
So that's part of the agreement?
It cannot be sold for development, period.
It also cannot be taken for other things either.
Can't be taken for
I mean, for instance, they couldn't take it for a park, or they couldn't take it for some kind of reservation.
Or schools, or
anything like that.
It's,
I mean, when they
set
say
aside
open spaces, they mean open spaces.
Now, it can be left open space. It doesn't all have to be cultivated then. I mean, it should be staying as a farm, I'm thinking. And
well, that's what
the
purpose is.
The purpose
it stays as a farm. But down the road, it's hard to envision what could happen. But
even if it were open space, it could always then come back and be used as a farm.
That's right.
Yeah.
In 20
in other
years
words,
or 15
you
years.
You can't be putting developments in. Because at that time, developments down in front of us, you can't see it from the house. There's probably a 100 home development put in on land butts ours, and over here, and that's down in Caroline Drive and Hyder Street.
So this land is always going to be here for farming.
That's right.
If people want to farm it. It's going to be available.
It's been a farm since 1722, and so.
It could buy some, could be split into smaller areas of farming.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be sold for any development.
But we own the farm. We still own the farm. And we can sell the farm. Or we can give it away.
But the future of it is
insured.
This house and land surrounding it is not under the development rights program.
Okay.
And there's all the land that we own is not.
Some of it.
How many acres then were put under the?
About 140 that were put under the development rights.
There's some woodlands and some wetlands,
mm-hmm.
and some.
There's some the woodland way off that didn't have any particular value. We kept out of it because that would dilute the money for the good land.
Now, are you really the last large farm in Westboro?
No.
You don't think so? Well, who else would be considered?
Well, the Quick Farm. John, the Arnolds.
Okay,
I was
thinking farm rather than orchard,
right.
But
well,
you're right, there are farmers.
There. They are farms. But if, when you come to,
is Parker
farms,
also?
Yeah.
Parker is an orchard. Seems that the.
Mike McBarry.
The Yulemans and
Ulmer Farm. They have a lot of vacant.
Yeah, I just talked to Ed Yulemans. So
oh, did you talk with him?
But he was saying that they are really the last dairy farm left.
Yeah, they are.
And
Howard Yulemans is the last dairy farm in town.
What other farmers do you know that maybe the small farmers that are involved still?
Ashworth's good because Brian works at UBS, but
Brian doesn't till the land there.
He grows corn and to feed his beefers and horses.
He keeps beef then.
He rents a piece of the land from us to put his beefers in, and he grows corn because his father owned the Whittemore farm. He uses that land for corn, hay.
Where was the Whittemore farm?
Well, it's over on Glen Street. It's probably the only old house barn. It was a red barn, I guess it still is, and a house on Glen Street.
Mm-hmm. Did that barn burn?
No. They had a fire in, but it didn't burn.
So the Ashworths, the Harveys still have some.
The Harveys have a lot of beefers and animals down there. Of course, they're both, their main thing is the dump.
Landfill.
They used to be a dairy farm. The father of the boys was a cattle dealer, and he bought and sold cattle, but also produced milk.
I'm trying to think of what is left, though. Not a lot, as far as...
No, there isn't.
There. Hopkinton Road now, there's a small farm there. What used to be the store?
Mrs. Grove has a blueberry patch there. Used to be in the old days, Ayers Farm. But, and I don't know, Raymond Roy has some... he's gone out of the dairy business, but he cuts hay. And I guess Lana has a berry farm and farms to some extent.
That's that way out in had Christmas trees that went fine. I guess maybe they
Christmas,
still
yeah.
And strawberries.
I think they had blueberries too. I don't know. I haven't kept up as to what they do.
It's mainly now the orchards and your farm and the Yulemans, I think, that are the bigger ones that people...
Barbarian,
too.
Vegetable farm.
So space is down to
Green
three.
Green G. White has a lot of land out there on Fisher Street.
It's not used for farming.
They cut some of the hay, cut wood, I don't know whether the animals on it or not.
Now let's go back a little bit then to when Westboro was farm community, really. Or the center always had some industry in it, but when were you, you had a farm, you said you sold your cows in 76. From when to when were you?
Well, I graduated from the university in 1932, and I came back to the farm and bought my cows in 1934. First cows in 1933 and farmed continually, milk cows until about 76 or 7, sometimes before they sold.
Were these whole state?
No, I had them mostly Guernseys.
Guernseys. And how many head did you have?
At the maximum, I had 34 milkers and heifers and calves to make up 55.
And at that time, what was it like in Westboro? Let's go back to the 30s, as far as, go back to the 30s, it's only 50 years ago, but there were a lot of dairies.
Oh, there's a lot of dairy farms. There's the Ward Farm, of course, that is open land to some extent. Jim Ward, I think Yulemans cuts the hay, but that's about it. And down here where Andrew's gravel pit was at Stearns, it had a few cows, and across, before you get there, where the
Well,
the Browns had the poultry farm there. That
where was that?
That's where Arthur George lives now. That was the
on Nurse
poultry farm.
Oh, yeah.
Right down
right
here
down
on Nurse.
Here on Nurse Street.
And that goes down to the junction of West Main Street, and then going further down by Wilkinson. But he has a, he grows some things there. There was a dairy farm there, then it was sold for a poultry farm. And across the street was the vinyl farm.
You know, there was a pig farm somewhere.
Andrews.
Yeah,
that was Andrews.
But that was my Stearns, when I was here, and Stearns owned it, but he sold it to.
Is that near Arch Street then?
No, no. That'd be right over here on
Old Nurse.
They're developing there now, Chris. You know, you saw some new houses coming up there.
And that was where the Andrews Stearns were.
The big farm.
Okay. Now, I just wanted to, I had some of these farms already listed, but I wanted to ask you, what was the procedure? How did, what did you do with your milk? Where did all this milk in Westboro go?
Well,
another farm we forgot. That's the Fay Farm.
That was on the corner
now
of Jasper.
The land is still there. It's open land. It isn't
property.
My son
rents quite a chunk of the land.
John rents some of it, but it belongs to the Fay family. That would be Mrs. Kendall Fay and her son, you know, she has Carol, and another son that works in the post office.
Now, Kendall Fay had also a dairy down on East Main Street.
Yes, where he processed the milk and delivered milk in town.
But his cows were out here?
Yes. Yeah. This was the farm. It was a lot of Fays in the town of Westboro.
They were the early people involved. Now, here we have a lot of milk, and I also wondered how I'd ever find out how much milk per year was put out in Westboro. I can sometimes get a number of the dairy farmers talking to people, but the quantity, would Department of Agriculture have that?
They wouldn't have figures on quantity.
I suppose just
plus, early in the 30s, there were a lot of farms, but they didn't have that many animals. And you get into the 40s and 50s, when the humans were going full tilt in the 60s, they made a lot of milk. And
now, I think there were some federal regulations that came in that changed things.
Well, they had a federal order in 1937 that that regulated the pricing of the product, and it kept accurate accounts by states, but not by towns.
Mm-hmm. In history, you probably read of the milk wars that, you know, happened before then.
I know there was a milk company, and then agents that were sending milk to Boston on the train, and then independent dairies. Can you tell me a little about that?
His milk went to Boston.
It did. I was trying to pinpoint about the time when it used to go down to Boston, but probably probably from 1875, probably to 1900, better.
And that was sent by train, right?
That was sent by train. They used to have a milk train, and the farmers would bring their milk down in cans aboard the train, and they'd load it, and then the next day the cans would go back, and many times they weren't washed, and they, sometimes they really were rotten.
It was a bad time without refrigeration.
Oh,
that's right.
Refrigeration, because we always had
ice.
Where'd
you get your ice now?
At our own pond, our own ice house. In the wintertime, we cut the ice and stored it, packed it in sawdust, and we had a...
How long did you do that, Sugar? How long?
Well, I did that. In fact, I cut ice the first year. I got my
car. In 1932.
And then shortly afterwards, I got my first mechanical...
Refrigerated tank. The first tank was a tank filled with water and the cans went into it.
Oh, all right. That was in the 30s? Now, there was a law, too, eventually, at least Ed Yulman was saying, that you had to have milk in a tank rather than in jugs. And that caused a lot of investment in equipment then, right, with pasteurization. And I'm not sure exactly when that went in.
Well, I bought my first milk tank in 1957. At that point, previous to that, we had been shipping our milk into constituent. Frank Houghton's plant and Twin Maple Farm in Detroit, as many of the Westboro farmers did.
Okay, I got some went to Deerfoot, did they? And some.
Yeah, I first started shipping my milk to Deerfoot farms in Southboro, and they sent out a truck around every day and picked up the milk and took it in there and processed it.
Now that was that right in the 30s? Well, as well,
yeah,
as.
That's when I first started there. Milk going into Deerfoot. That's my first dealer.
And that continued right up till when?
Well, they sold out in the 40s.
Did they sell out before the milk order?
That I couldn't tell you.
What was the milk order?
The federal order.
There were lots of meetings and lots of, my husband was involved in these meetings of getting together for the federal order, deciding on it.
And the federal order would be the one
that's in place now, but it's back in 1937.
Which had to deal with pasteurization and all that type of thing?
No, it had nothing to do with the health features of milk, but only for the for the pricing and to keep outside. It sort of protected the area markets so that the dealers wouldn't bring in milk from great distances and dilute the price of the milk. So that was set up, and the rules and regulations have been
effective. You probably still see ads once in a while, Massachusetts, milk for Massachusetts people.
Same idea. But now Deerfoot then continued. You think it stopped in the 40s after the war, or?
I don't know.
I was wondering where the milk went then. Well, there's still quite a few dairy farmers in the 50s in Westboro.
A lot of this milk, some of it went to those who belonged to the New England Milk Producers Association. Their milk went into Worcester, and then it was distributed to dealers in the Worcester area. At that time, there was Leamington Ice and Miola, and I don't know, there must have been a dozen small dealers that took milk, and much of it was taken through the New England Milk Producers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And Hood had a plant in Worcester, and after I sold milk into Hood in Worcester for quite a while, and then we sold milk into Twin Maple Farms in Detroit.
Now, did they come around, or did you have to?
Well, there's a truck driver.
Truck driver would pick
milk up every day and brought it into Detroit. Then,
how much milk a day would you be producing then? Let's say your boom times are your best.
Well, get that off. We'll find out.
I asked Helen why she thought a lot of the small dairies went out of business in Westboro, and she was saying it's a combination of things. Why do you think?
Well, for example, when got through making milk to Franco, which is about 1957. We shipped to Hood in Worcester. And at that time, they shifted from canned milk to bulk tank milk. Okay, so we had to go out and buy a 300-gallon tank, which cost $2,100. Now, $2,100 to a small producer is about putting their rip.
Mm-hmm. Many of them did borrow money, of course.
Oh, they borrowed.
Sure, but the bulk tanks usually were at least 300 gallons, is that?
Well, no, it came all sizes, but
itself.
Like Eddie Dunn down there and on the corner of Fisher Street and Mill Road, he had a small bulk tank. I don't know, it was maybe 150 gallons. And they went 200, 300, 400, 500. And they go every 100 gallons up to probably 2,500. And, you know,
sure, but that would mean you'd have to keep quite a few cows, to justify bulk tank, and that may have been one of the reasons.
That's one of the reasons. And since the war in the 40s, labor became quite expensive. And in order to produce the milk, produce more milk to fill your tanks, you had to make additions to your buildings, you had to have more hay land, crop land, one thing or another, and it just became too much for a lot of the farmers to handle, so they went out of business. Everything became so mechanized. Now, when I first started in, I used horses, and did all my farm work with horses.
How long? And that, also you could feed horses
hay? Hay, grain, whatever that, they eat. But,
And then when did the switch over to tractors go?
That came in the 40s. I bought my first tractor in 41. But they had tractors before that, but I wasn't the first to have a tractor. And,
Then the expense was more, you
said? Then the expense was more because you had to convert all your equipment over to tractor equipment. Your hand plows and horses pulled were no good. You had to have heavier and bigger plows. Your harrows were bigger. Everything was bigger and stronger and cost more.
And you did this because you needed to...
You had to...
Produce more, you mean?
Right.
I mean, you could stay with the horse if you wanted to, but you couldn't.
You were limited for the amount that you could do with a pair of horses. And so that was the trend. And then the tractors became more popular when they got off of steel and got onto rubber. My first tractor had rubber.
Your father had a tractor for steel.
This is the
wheels,
right? Yeah. Okay. Now you were saying you were going to look up your
I shipped my last milk in August of 1976, so that's when I first stopped. But in that page, in that period, for example. In January of 76, I shipped 10,615 pounds of milk. That's for the first half. In the second half of the month, it was 12,217. So that's about 22,000 pounds a month that I shipped in January of that year.
And that would be
and
pretty
in
different.
May, I shipped 27,000 plus. So that
25 might be the average or so.
Yeah. And at that time, the blend was around $10.65 for 1 month, $9.68 for another month, $10.18.
What's blend?
That's what you get for the milk.
Per pound?
100 pounds.
I'll explain the blend price here.
Well, now that's part of the art, but a blend is the price you get for 100 pounds of milk.
Okay.
And that in the bulk tanks, everything is converted to pounds. In cans, it was converted to, quarts.
Can you tell me what would be the comparison between what the price you got in 1932 or whatever, and the price? I know the price you ended up with, but.
Well, I thought I got some of those 32 records somewhere, but it was it probably doubled in 76 over what it was in 33.
But your costs and expenses also doubled too. I mean, they kept right along. Okay. Now, did you do mainly dairy?
Yep.
Okay. People usually did one or the other. Now, some of them switched over to vegetables, some of the smaller ones, I guess, when the bulk tank thing came in.
Yeah, they used some vegetables, but mostly it was, of course, many times if you didn't want to milk cows, you raised some beavers or things like that, but that wasn't too popular. Many, we could raise some heifer calves, so they could sell dairy cows to the people who were milking them.
Okay.
But mostly people went out of business because the price of the land got attractive and they sold out. Up Adams Street, there was a farm at the top of the hill there, Adams Farm, and they finally got to the point where there weren't any young people coming along who wanted the farm, so they sold the land for development.
Mm-hmm. And that has happened more and more.
More and more, that's right.
Most started right in the 50s and 60s, it sounded like, or began in the 50s.
Yeah.
McTaggart's, I don't know when they sold.
Well, of course, they were started out as a dairy farm. In fact, I bought Walt McTaggart's herd. Oh, that was probably in the late 30s, because at that time, we were on a base excess plan we had Deerfoot, and that meant that you had a base quantity of milk that you could sell, and anything over that base was considered surplus, and you got a surplus price for the excess, and you got paid the base price, which was the normal price of milk, so that. In order to build up your base, when I was starting in, I had a small, only a few cows, and I increased my base by buying up small herds.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought up Walter's herd and put him in the barn. I had another small herd down south where I bought, and in order to increase my base, the base went with the cows, so
right.
That you could, if you were only entitled to make three or 400 pounds a day, whatever that converted to in a month, you bought somebody else's base and you added to it so you could make ship 500 or 600 pounds a month.
Okay.
So that was before the federal order came in. But so that's how I built my herd from 8 cows up to
50 or so.
The milk order came in, and that was didn't have any base plan, so then you could buy or make as much milk as you wanted to.
Milk order, you said, is that the one in 37 that you're talking about? What was it like in Westboro during the Depression? How did it affect you? And maybe that was a little before.
Well, I came out of college in 32.
So that was the tail end, but
I couldn't find a market for milk. I just worked around the farm here, pruned apple trees, sold hay, and didn't do much agriculture.
If you lived on a farm, though, in the Depression, you were well off because you could raise all your own food, and it made a difference.
But then I bought cows in 33, so that they found a maggot, so that they started making milk. But I was looking for those early records that I had, and I can't find them anywhere. You know anyway?
It's hard to, I think, to ask how it was when you were, you don't, unless
you, don't remember.
You had real traumatic bad times, you don't remember it. And,
that's right.
You know, and, cause I did not grow up on a farm, but I know that it was not that bad a time. We didn't have any money and so forth, but as kids, I'm sure we were happy. Mm-hmm. I know that I was. It wasn't an unhappy time. I think in the cities it was probably quite different.
I'm trying to get an idea of what Westboro was like in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
And how would you characterize Westboro in the 30s and 40s, Sugar, as a town?
It was small community.
It was probably pretty typical of small community. There was some, and of course there's a lot now, industry in mm-hmm. Westboro, and some, of course, small town.
Any reason why Westboro had so many dairies and farms? It was a good land particularly?
Yeah, of course, we're relatively near the markets.
But,
play a chance to sell your product.
It was pretty much the same, though, Shug, in Grafton and Upton.
Oh, yeah.
All these country towns were pretty much the same.
It was a thing people did.
Because they started in agriculture.
Everyone started out in agriculture.
Mr. Fay had his milk route, and he bought milk from small dairies in town. And,
Kendall Fay did buy milk as well?
He bought milk. And always, well, Walker sold milk to him for years. And, not sure what Eddie done. Well, like I said, he done that with him. But there are other farms that did sell milk to him. Offhand, they can't spot them all.
When did the Fays stop?
Well,
I think they were in the 60s,
but
Mrs. Safay is elderly, but she really is in very good physical condition.
Oh, good.
I saw her just briefly at the Senior Citizens Fair, which was yesterday, and I saw her briefly, and I think she, you know, might talk to her.
And she was involved in it. Did the sons continue it too then?
No, they didn't.
It was just Kendall Fay then that was in
the And he has two sons, and neither of them are in agriculture.
Oh, wanted to be in agriculture.
Now, it's fairly rare, isn't it, that your family is continuing in agriculture. I think that you have a son, Jonathan, who is continuing on. But this has not happened in many of the Westboro farms, I don't believe.
It hasn't in Westboro, but I suppose we're the exception to the rule.
That's good.
Well, you need to have land to come back to, and I think it's more necessary that you have some equity because you do have to live, and mm-hmm. many small farms would not support two families or three families.
So they go on to something else.
Yes,
that's true. And then as the parents get older, they can't continue.
Sometimes they come back.
They come back or they can't continue and they would sell.
That was true in our family. My grandfather got sick in 1896. He asked, my father was out on the West Coast working on the Hearst Ranch in California. So he came back home. He wasn't a farmhand up in Hearst Ranch. He was
more like a business person.
A bookkeeper or something.
Keeper.
And your grandfather's name was?
Benjamin Alden.
Benjamin.
And he came back. He got sick. My dad came home. My grandfather died. My dad took over.
And that was around what time?
I think he died in 96. I see the, I'm looking through the books and there's a space in, I think it was August 96 until May of 97. May of 97, my dad had a stand up in the books at that time.
And your father's name was?
Arthur Merritt.
He was Arthur Merritt.
But during the grandfather, at that time, I guess he sold some milk to neighbors, but he did a lot with apples. He had this.
He shipped apples to New York.
Yeah, he had this was apples.
Oh.
And we have.
Back in those books there, there's some risk accountings of apples shipped. They shipped to this place in Glasgow.
Where?
Glasgow, Scotland.
Yes. And England, too. We have
well,
some.
That's England.
Mm-hmm. It's Scotland, yeah. Well, it's Great Britain.
Yeah. Well, we do have, because no one ever threw anything away in this place. And we came across the fields of lading and stuff where apples.
Apples seem to be important in Westboro, and I don't know whether it's good land,
it
I guess.
It's probably a good, an ideal climate as much as anything.
Well, my grandfather used to show apples up at the, what they call the New England Fair up in Worcester. And at one time he had on an exhibit 68 different varieties of apples.
Wow, he was into it a lot.
Well, he had a lot of different varieties. The most he shipped to England, I think, were Baldwin's and Greenings.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what the milk wars were that you were talking about?
Tell me, I don't recall any milk wars.
Well, I guess in Westboro, I don't know what happened in Westboro. I guess I listened to mostly, you remember Vivian Gilman, she lived on a farm in New York.
Well, they, they had problems, and the milk
they
was
would
cheap,
take their
they dumped milk, and go on a strike to get more money for their milk, and they, rough times, they would, when trucks came along with milk, they would
stick to a price war more than anything else,
right.
Really.
Yeah. Tried to get a fair price for the product.
I know that in Westboro, it was the dairymen that didn't like the dealers sometimes that were sending their milk into Boston, and they would organize their own group try to get a better price among themselves. Now, why did this farm change from a dairy farm to the berry farm?
Well, frankly, my son started, I got rid of the cows in 76, so he must have started in about 73.
But
he decided that,
so he started, set out his own, first he started with 2 acres of strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
And he did pretty well with 2 acres, so he kept increasing. And after 2 or 3 years of sales of strawberries, he was grossing more in a month than I could gross in a year. Now, that's a pretty good excuse for getting out of the dairy.
It's a lot more profitable.
And you see, he was taking my best land for his strawberries, so I was getting reduced in land for hay and corn. About that time, I had a heart attack, 74, and so.
A lot of work. A dairy's a lot of work, or naturally. So, farming's a lot of work.
It's a 7-day-a-week job with dairy, and the hours are long, and can be difficult.
Well, I think Jonathan, growing up on a dairy farm, decided he did not want dairy. Don't you think that's true?
Well, yes, but also my second son, Tim, Whiteley, had gone into a strawberry nursery, and that gave I got an opportunity to see what the strawberry business is all about. And so then my jock bought his plants with his brother and started in.
Now, how many acres are under cultivation now for berries?
I think around 18 of strawberries. And I think it's about an acre of summer raspberries and 2 acres of winter fall raspberries. Well, he just set out a half an acre this spring, and he hopes to set out 2-3 acres of blueberries, more blueberries next spring.
The land for blueberries takes much more culture over a longer period. It requires different type of plant. And also, he's been a couple of years getting the land in order.
It takes 5 or 6 years from the time you put a set out the blueberry bushes. Get a crop, so you've got a lot of investment over a period of years before you can get any results.
What's nice is your land can be used, and you can have an advantage of being able to wait as far as
other crops
are coming along too.
Jock has sold, he sells hay, he still does. He has sold wood, although he isn't selling any wood now.
It's a combination. It's interesting. This when I talk to people who spent their time downtown, they are telling me about the shoe factory and the hat factory, and there was almost two types of life in Westboro:
right,
the downtown life. And what did you do for fun, Sugar? Growing up?
We had a gang of people about our own age, and we used to go out with them. In fact, there wasn't a hell of a lot of fun doing those first years because that was the middle of the Depression. That was before, but I was in the 30s. Yeah, that was a Depression.
In the 20s when you were growing up, mostly on the... You